Welcome to Market Byte. My name's Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, the editor of ZDNet's All About Microsoft blog.
The rumor is Windows 8 will be ready but to ship by April 2012. Can they do it? Should they do it? And is Microsoft finally reasserting some kind of control over the Windows brand? Microsoft's just released Office 365, but is this the same old BPOS? And if so, why is Google so worried? And Steve Ballmer, the clock is ticking on Steve, and he's now just blown Regulation FD, that's fair disclosure, by kind of pre-announcing the company's annual results in his defense. Steve says he's not going, but should he? MJ, it's been quite an eventful couple of weeks, hasn't it, in the world of Microsoft?
It has, especially this week.
Yeah, it went to the quiet summer, yeah.
I know.
Well, we were expecting some news on Windows. It's a lot of people were reporting about it. And then you ran the story. There's been lots of kind of people have been reporting on the technical details in the Windows 8 code, talking about this feature and that feature. But then you came up with something that was interesting. Your sources are telling you that an OS we were all expecting would be released in the second half of 2012. Microsoft is now looking at releasing in April 2012, so that's less than a year from now. That's a heck of a pace, Brownlee. Can they move that fast? Should they move that fast? How can they deliver it that quickly?
Let me just like tell you a little background about this whole thing. So the post I wrote about Windows 8 possibly being released to manufacturing in April 2012, it's based on one source, which I was really upfront about in my post. Now, it's one very good and very accurate source of mine, who I'm protecting, so I'm not telling you any more about that source.
Is this Steven Sinofsky again?
Yes, Steven Sinofsky and I are chatting on Twitter, and he told me. No, actually, I can't tell you where I'm hearing it, but I'll tell you, when I got the tip, I at first was completely in disbelief, like you. I said, this can't even be possible, right? This is the timetable's too short. This can't happen. But then I started thinking about it. And so, okay, let's think this through a little bit, right? So we know they're pretty far along with Windows 8 right now. I mean, they've completed the internal milestone builds. So they've done milestone 0, 1, 2, and 3. Those are done. And you know Microsoft, they don't show a product until it's pretty locked and loaded, right? So at All Things D, they just showed us the user interface. But the user interface is always the last thing they show on Windows. Okay, so start all the conspiracy theories, right? They're done. This is what I'm thinking. I'm thinking they're done. They're going to, as my tipster said, actually be ready to have a beta launch in Anaheim at the Build conference. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we've seen, especially with Windows 7, we've seen the start of this. Microsoft's really changing how they do beta testing. And in the old days, they'd throw a beta out there, and they'd let people chew on it for months and talk about it and give feedback, and they'd look at the feedback and like start tweaking the product. And then there'd be another beta, and then there'd be some release candidates. But in the new Windows world, that's not how they beta test anymore. What they do is they put a beta out, and they're pretty sure it's done and good. And unless there's something really egregious in it, they're not going to have to do much to it.
How can they do this? Because it's still Windows and it's still an extremely complicated code base. It seems to me that this has been the case. It's Windows 7 when they kind of shipped that pretty quickly by comparisons to Windows Vista. And the logic at the time was all the heavy lifting had actually been done in Vista. So what does this tell us about Windows 8? That there's, you know, and I'm about to caveat what I'm about to say, that there's not much difference between Windows 7 and Windows 8, and therefore Windows Vista, apart from the interface, which we all know is going to be different. It's going to have the touch interface, it's going to have the tiles, which would seem where most of the work has gone. But what does this say about what we should expect in terms of the features and functionality in Windows 8? If they can, you know, is it just going to be Windows 7 Part 2, and is it going to be Windows Vista Part 3?
I think it's a little bit of both of the two things you're talking about. So they're not going to make any really deep kernel level changes from what I hear. And I would argue nor should they, because if they are doing that, it's going to be really disruptive and their OEMs and their software partners are going to hate it. Mm-hmm. And they don't really need to change it down at that level, I'd argue. You know, they've been kind of making the tweaks through what's called MinWin, the componentized kind of core of Windows, and they continue to hone that and refine that. But they're not, like, building an operating system from scratch, right? They're taking the kernel, they're putting a new UI on it, they're changing a lot of things. I mean, they're changing the app model, the packaging model, and all that. But these are all things they've been planning and working on since even before Windows 7 was released to manufacturing in 2009. So they've been working on this a long time. And, you know, a lot of people say, oh, it's going to, you know, you have two camps. You have the camp that say it's going to be service pack, whatever, of Vista, like you just said. Mm-hmm. And then you get the other camp going, this is completely different. It's totally revolutionary. I think it's somewhere in the middle of those two things.
The big change this time is of course, the new form factor. Well, there's a couple of big changes, and a lot of it comes around down to the interface. It's the form factor, the inclusion of the tablet form factor. It's the touch aspects. It seems to be is it the same as it looks the same as Windows Phone? Is it the same code underneath? Is it can they therefore short circuit or shortcut the development process on that basis? Mm-hmm. And then of course the other aspect here in play is the ARM component, because that's a completely new derivation for them again. How can they land this thing in such a short time frame when they've got the tablet form factor in play, the ARM ramp up in play as well?
Yep. Well, okay, so here's another kind of like, let's think this through, right? So everybody's like, ARM, you know, they're building that from scratch, and of course they can't be that fast and it can't be ready yet. Actually, they've been trying to build Windows on ARM since Vista. Mm-hmm. And there was a project called Long Arm that was the code name of it. And they've basically almost had Windows able to run on ARM for years. I mean, they've been working on this problem for a long time. I'd argue maybe their partnership with Intel kept them from launching it. Mm-hmm. But they have been working on it. It's not something they just started this year, you know. So, they showed at All Things D and at Computex recently that they've got it working. It's working already, and it's running some of the same apps that they're running on Intel already. They even showed Word printing from Windows 8 running on ARM. So it's pretty far along, guys. You know, it's not something they've got still a ton more tweaking to do. So I'm with you on this, Gavin. Like, I think it's a super fast time frame, and it's like, wow, can they really pull it off? But I think maybe they can, and I think they really have to is the other part of it. I think especially for the tablet space, they can't wait till next fall to launch their iPad competitor.
No. Well, if we look at the dates, if you look at an April release, I guess that it puts them in the frame for getting that all-important back-to-school shopping crowd, which kind of kicks in around late August and September, and that's the ramp-up for the fall and Christmas shopping seasons as well, which is obviously supposed to be a good time for PC makers. You know, external economic factors aside, like, you know, the economy going south, but has traditionally been a good time for PC makers.
Yeah. The other kind of interesting part to this whole thing, which kind of reared its head again when I ran this rumor, is, you know, are they going to deliver ARM and Intel ports at the same time? Mm. And my contact says yes. My contact says the position that they're trying to make is it's all the same code. Mm. It runs the same stuff. And so they don't want to ship ARM then Intel or Intel then ARM, because that takes away from that message. Mm. But when I did run this rumor, I heard again from people who say, I think it's going to be the ARM tablets that are going to be ready first, and they're going to hold the Intel port till later, although I'm not really sure why they would do that. And then you have the people saying the opposite. They're going to come out with the Intel port first, and ARM is going to be in the fall. Mm-hmm. But again, that's not what I'm hearing from my contacts who I talk to about Windows 8.
If they succeed, it's a big turnaround in the story of development of Windows. I mean, in some ways, it puts them back on a roadmap of consistency that we had before Windows Vista. But with the added factor that things are more complicated now by the inclusion of the ARM, if they can get this thing out, if they can get Intel and ARM versions of Windows out at the same time, then they seem to have their manufacturing process pretty much honed, it would seem. The question then becomes, what happens next in terms of ongoing ability to maintain versions of Windows across all these platforms? And then it becomes the interesting thing further down the road is support and maintenance for these different versions, and how far back does the company go in terms of, you know, do we offer the same 10-year support cycle for the ARM version, and then how many versions of systems on a chip? And then you're starting to move into unknown territory there of, does Microsoft become more like an IBM in terms of having this extended support and maintenance business, you know, where you're kind of like keeping service packs out there and bugs fixes out there and armies of consultants, which is, you know, not the business Microsoft wants to be in. You know, that's not their core business. I don't think they want to be in it either.
Well, you know, we just saw recently with the whole scuffle between the IE team and the Firefox team about, yeah, how long do you keep supporting older versions? Microsoft's prided itself on supporting the older versions, especially because a lot of businesses are still on older versions. Like, mm-hmm, there's still 60% of the business market running XP. Mm-hmm. I mean, so they have to keep supporting it, and they are still supporting it, though reluctantly. So I think we're going to see them continue to have very robust backward support policies, which, when you have over a billion users, and a lot of them are business users, you kind of have to.
Well, let's change the conversation slightly, because, you know, you finished up there by talking about business users. And the thing I thought was interesting was something that I kind of picked up on, was Microsoft has hired a new guy who's going to be director of brand strategy for Microsoft. The guy used to be a director of brand strategy at Disney, a guy called Jay Victor. He is, from what I understand, he's going to be in charge of brand strategy. He's in something called the Central Marketing Group, which is kind of the wheelhouse on all Microsoft's product and its corporate branding. And his responsibility will be what Microsoft calls its core products, which are Office, Windows, Bing, and Xbox, which is interesting because his baptism of fire in that case is going to be the launch of Windows 8. Yeah. And he has to get very kind of granular on a lot of the stuff. I mean, he has to come up with work names, he has to do market research, he has to do business development, he has to come up with names of products, he has to come up with how the packaging, he has to create conceptual ideas on how things are sold and presented. He has to work through analyst relations, investor relations, press relations. He has to work through retail. He has to work through events. Not clear if there was a guy in this job before him. If there was, it's interesting that they've gone and recruited this guy who did exactly the same job for Disney, for their family stuff. So it says to me that Microsoft is positioning to, Windows 8 for a consumer audience, which is precisely where Microsoft is, its head is these days. While, yes, we know they've got a lot of business users, and they're very worthy and they pay a lot of money, the focus of Windows 7, the focus of the previous two versions of Internet Explorer and the upcoming Internet Explorer 10 has been the consumer, pretty much. Yep. I mean, do you think that's a fair assessment, MJ?
I do. Yep, I do. And if you look at more and more where Microsoft's putting its energy and its money as far as advertising and marketing, it's all about the consumer.
Yeah.
I mean, look how much we've heard about Kinect this year. It's like, we don't hear anymore about like Office Service Pack 1. We hear about, hey, Kinect, you know?
Yeah.
And I understand why Microsoft's doing that, because they feel that, you know, we're going towards this whole consumerization of IT paradigm, and the way that you win mind share with even business users is to go at them through consumer products. Mm-hmm. I, like I've said before, I don't always know that I believe that that is a true statement, but that's definitely what they believe.
That's a separate discussion, but I think that that's this one way of looking at it. I think in this case, I like to see it more in kind of broad competitive terms. I mean, Apple is, it always comes back to Apple. Apple is the thorn in Microsoft's side. In survey after survey by consumers, it's the Apple brand which is seen as being cool, it's seen as being innovative, it's seen as being desirable, or it's even number one. I think there was a survey out earlier this year that said Apple had surpassed Google to become the world's most valuable brand. I mean, all these surveys are vague. There's like, you know, there's no substance to them, but it is a mind share. Well, but what that feeds to in the real world is product adoption, and that says that people are fighting each other to own an iPad or a smartphone, but who wants to open the package under the Christmas tree on Christmas Day and find out you've got a zoo, you know?
It's me! Smart. I do!
That's because you're such a fan, Mike's a fanboy, MJ.
No, I'm not. I have an iPad, but I also do have a Zoom that I like.
Listen, ordinary people in the real world, if I want an iPad, the kid wants an iPad. I don't want to get the Windows equivalent because it was cheaper.
I'll say as an aside, based on what we've seen of Windows 8 so far, man, if they can make a Windows 8 tablet that looks like that, I may turn in my iPad.
You know, I've already got the counter slogan for that.
Yeah.
Windows 8, if you like to live in boxes.
Oh, yeah. But I like the boxy interface. I like it on the phone, and I think I'm going to like it on a touch tablet. I don't think I'm going to like it on my PC, but we'll see.
It comes down to personal taste. I don't really care for the box format and the font that's kind of like designed deliberately to be slightly outside of the screen size. It's like...
Yeah,
it's Microsoft reinventing the paradigm, I guess, or reinventing for themselves. So anyway, back to Disney. It seems like there's going to be a big push on the consumer.
Yep.
There already is a big push on the consumer on Internet Explorer 10. Yep. And there has been on 9, and they're now going to follow up with Windows 8, which is obviously going to be Internet Explorer 10, and Windows 8 are going to be the kind of fellow travelers, aren't they? The browser and the operating system are married together.
Yep, and I think it's also worth noting, you know, that this guy from Disney, he's just one more piece of the whole shakeup that's been happening in advertising and marketing with Microsoft in the past couple months. I mean, absolutely. Remember there's Mitch Matthews leaving, who was like the head of marketing and advertising.
She was Chris head of CMG. She's been there 22 CMG. Years. Yeah.
Yep. And then Chris Capicella taking her place, and they're switching up all their advertising agencies. They dropped JWT for Bing and Office. So there's a ton of big changes happening with Microsoft's marketing campaigns. And you're right, we're first going to see the fallouts of Windows 8 in a big way.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Christmas next year will be interesting as well, if we finally see Microsoft finally manages to develop a consistent or actually interesting marketing messaging story around all that stuff. But we can't get away from business for too long. And let's get back to some of the business products. Office 365.
Yes. Yep, so I was there. I was there this week in New York at the launch with Steve Ballmer.
Crushing amounts of preemptive news and comment, and even more comment and news on the day and analysis afterwards. let's explain a little bit. For people who don't know what Office 365 is, the shorthand is it's the update. It's the rebranded update to BPOS.
Yes.
And so people might go, well, what's that? So
BPOS is not what you expect from what that acronym sounds like. It is not a big piece of something.
Software in the sky.
Software. No, it is not. It's Business Productivity Online Suite, which just rolled off the tongue.
It does. And they've updated that with Office 365, which is part, it obviously sounds hip and cool. And it involves the the 2010 generation of products from Microsoft in terms of Exchange, SharePoint, Link. It includes Office Web Apps, which is kind of the sort of version of Office in the sky, but is not the version of Office in the sky, as many people have been misreporting it. You get some functionality from Office, Excel, and PowerPoint in a hosted cloud browser environment, but you don't get all the functionality.
Right.
You get also a new... The complexity where this really gets complicated is on the licensing, because, you know, it's not just to come and buy this thing. There's so many different prices. There's so many ways you can buy it. They're all subscription, but there are different levels of if you get this component, you buy that, you pay this much, etc. They've also thrown in... They've created... unusually for a cloud... Let's call it a cloud service. Let's call it a hosted service. The one thing you absolutely need is a version of Office running on your desktop to make this work. And in this case, you need Office 2010.
Let me be a counterpoint on that. Office 2010 Professional Plus as part of this, which I agree, it did make it really complicated that they added that in. And you can pay for it on a subscription basis.
Yes.
But you don't have to have it.
Yeah.
You don't have to have Office on your desktop to make this work.
If you don't know how to use it,
you use it through Office web apps.
Exactly, which is not a full version of Office. So you really do need Office on the desktop if you want to actually create docs. It's one of those things. You don't have to have it, but it's going to make life a lot easier if you do have it, if you want to do full Office productivity.
It will definitely make your life easier. But if you're one of the kind of Office workers who doesn't actually create spreadsheets and PowerPoints, which I kind of am one of those people. Mm-hmm. I do it as seldom as possible because I'm not good at it. Then I probably could use Office web apps because I mostly am reading stuff in Office more than I am writing stuff in Office.
Well, tell me the big underlying changes was there's two kind of important things. Is BPOS was you used Office, was it 2003 and Outlook 2003? That's gone. Obviously, now it's Office 2010, and I think Office 2007 with the SP edition, one of the SPs. The really interesting thing is, from a technical perspective, is the fact there's now a multi-tenant version of Exchange Server running under the cover, isn't there? If you can explain that a little bit, MJ.
Yeah. So one of the things that has been wrong with BPOS and a problem with BPOS, as we've seen in the past few months with many outages of BPOS, is that it wasn't architected on a version of Exchange that was multi-tenant by design. So that means they kind of, retrofitted Exchange to make it work in a multi-tenant environment where lots of people share the same server. But it never really worked right. And that's why we kept seeing all these outages, almost all of which were attributable to Exchange.
Mm-hmm.
So now, with the new version, with Office 365, you get... It's built around, as the Exchange pillar, Exchange Server 2010, some of that functionality, which is something that can be made multi-tenant very easily and is much more resilient, they say. So Microsoft is basically saying, because we're doing this and we're using a better version of Exchange that's more suited to multi-tenant architectures, you should not have all this downtime that we had with BPOS.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, Gavin, the other versions of the core products that are in the suite, it's SharePoint 2010 and it's Link 2010. And Link 2010 is the new name for Office Communication Server. So that's their unified communication suite. So all of these are more up-to-date versions of the products than were in the BPOS suite. So again, Microsoft's saying this should make it more resilient, this should have less downtime, it should have more of the features that people are running in their on-premises servers, and it should make it easier to mix and match if you want to put some of your data in the cloud and some on-premises.
Well, actually, just interesting, one of our guys in the UK interviewed Microsoft's head of UK small to medium enterprise. Actually, his job title is Microsoft UK SME Cloud Lead. So his name is Peter King. I've come across this guy before. Apparently, he said Microsoft cannot guarantee. The place he said outages are going to happen. So even though you know it's a brave new world, and that was the BPOS was the old world, we had the outages. He's still saying expect outages in the future, which I don't know what to say really. So it's kind of like. if anyone's expecting, you know, it won't happen. It happened under BPOS, it won't happen under Office 365. I think you're going to have a bit of a reality check. I mean, the reality is these services do go offline at some point. It's a matter of how and when and how often.
Yep. I mean, and if somebody said to me, we're never going to have another outage, I'd be like, wow, you're not living in reality. You're living in the cloud. So, yeah. So I think Office 365, it's interesting. One of the other interesting things I found out by going to the launch is what they're going to do next with it, which is kind of interesting. They're going to expand the suite to include two products that are not currently in it. One of them is hosted CRM, so Dynamics CRM will be added to it later this year. And the other piece is Intune, Windows Intune, which is their PC management service, which also includes some security pieces. And they're going to add that. They didn't say when. So that's very interesting that they're going to expand the suite, add more things to it, add some management capabilities through Intune, and kind of let people make up even more complex mix and match plans. Just think how complex that's going to be. You're not just going to have E plans and P plans and K, but then you're going to have add Dynamics CRM or take away Windows Intune. So it should get really, really complex then.
It really is. It's too much information. Let's take a step back. Obviously, you know, it's tempting to see us in a battle of the titans on this one, and Google was obviously there first with Google Apps. They published a preemptive blog strike the day before. They delivered, was 365 reasons not to move to Office 365, but there were only four reasons. So they came down to some broad, like the complexity, I believe, the fact you still need client software, and there are some other reasons on there as well. I mean, it was competitive talking points, but it kind of points to the fact Google is worried about this to a great extent, because for the last year or so, we've been getting a lot of press releases from both companies saying how they've won, you know, this city and that state authority has gone over to using their respective, you know, Google Apps or BPOS as it was. So there's a very tight competition underway here between the two. And in many ways, it's a kind of echo of the past debate we used to have this in the 90s was, you know, who's using Office and who's using Exchange as opposed to using, you know, Novell WordPerfect or using Lotus Notes, you know, who won the accounts. And I think it was Kevin Turner who won the quarterly financial results during the most current financial year, made it clear that it's still these Office for Microsoft, it's the Office productivity stuff that is where the majority of the cloud business and money is coming from Microsoft. So in many ways, it's not, you know, this is not a, you know, Office 365 is very important for Microsoft because it goes to the heart of fighting Google in an area of the cloud that it's got experience of fighting other people in on the desktop in years past, which has been the productivity suite and the email and collaboration stuff. And Microsoft does fight a tough battle there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And, you know, in that post that Google did about, you know, their 365 reasons to go Google, the one area where they keep kind of poking Microsoft, where I think it is very justified, is in Office web apps.
Yeah.
That, to me, is still like the part of this whole Office 365 package that is really murky, hard to figure out when you're in an Office web app or you're using the desktop version, what you can do in one, then you can't do in the other one. You know, how to actually find your Office web apps, although they've kind of fixed that to some extent with what they've done with SkyDrive lately, made it a lot easier to find your documents. But I think Microsoft really needs to kind of make that experience, the Office web apps experience, more homogeneous.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, in the different Office web apps, you can do different things in each one. Like in the Word app, you can do more than you can do, say, in the Excel app.
Mm-hmm.
And they're at all very different versions and very different levels. And I asked Microsoft about this at the launch, actually, and said, you know, can you do something to make this easier? And they said, you may remember back when we were creating Office, the Office desktop suite, that all the point products we pulled in were also at different levels and different versions. And we, mm-hmm. it took us a while to get them all synced up and make them all comparable feature-wise, all work well together, all integrate. And they said it's going to take us a while on Office Web Apps. So as long as it takes, that's going to give Google a good place to keep needling them.
Yeah, as long as it takes. I can't believe it's back to the 90s of Office versus WordPerfect again. And
here we go again.
Well, it's this takes us into, you know, there's been a lot of talk. We've been talking about this offline about people have written off Microsoft for a long time, and now it seems like this is suddenly, even if they don't get it right, there's a lot of energy around Microsoft these days. But the one man who's in charge of all this is Steve Ballmer, and we've noticed that there's been a very slowly building campaign or campaign of discontent amongst the Microsoft investors direct towards Steve Ballmer. And I'm pleased to say we actually hit on this before the investors woke up to it, because we were like, when are they going to do something about Steve-O? Because, you know, he missed out on the iPhone, he missed out on the tablet, you know, the internet business is still underwater in terms of, you know, making money. The market share battle is a long way off of being won against Google. And of course, that was the other thing, the complete asleep at the wheel on the search engine competitor. All this stuff that Microsoft is racing to catch up to other people on. So it was with great interest that we read recently that Steve Ballmer was put on the defensive at a meeting in his hometown of Seattle. It was a Rotary Club. We thought Rotary Clubs would get this aggressive.
I know, and they did get pretty aggressive. They had somebody at the Rotary Club meeting ask him, you know, what he thought of all the people calling for his head, basically.
And this is what he said: "You tell me if I lack energy, conviction, or we're not driving change we need to drive." There's some use of capital letters in there in some of the publications I've seen.
Yes.
And then this is where it got interesting. So one thing is, you know, that's one thing. And then the second thing, which I thought was interesting, I said, there's a reason why we'll do almost $70 billion in revenue this year. We'll make over 27 billion in profits. That, as far as I can see, is a disclosure of financial reporting, and they did it in a way that's not compliant with the US regulation FD, which says you have to tell everyone at the same time, not just small groups of people in small ways, which could be seen as insider trading. So Microsoft, Steve-O, back up against the wall. He lets the cat out of the bag on the annual results. That, he must have some pressure there.
Yeah, I got to say, when I saw that, because I asked to see the transcript, too, what he said. I'm like, did he really just say that? and, you know, Microsoft is saying, well, he didn't actually give the exact revenue count, and it's just approximate and all. It's pretty specific.
That's pretty specific. And the thing we couldn't work out, we were trying to work this out, was, as we all know, companies... The Microsoft financial year ends on June the 30th. They report on, when is it, mid-June?
July 21st.
July 21st.
Yes.
They should, surely, under Regulation FD, they surely should be in the quiet period now.
I would think.
I would have thought, and there's no actual, it doesn't seem like there's any set date or day timeline on quiet periods. We couldn't find one, but any other company would surely have said, in the quiet period, can't talk about financial results. And Steve's just kind of like, surely just gone and revealed two of the biggest pieces of information, the results, the revenue and the profits.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, this past week, which is the week they've launched Office 365, their stock price has been up, or at least higher than usual all week, even before he said this. And now it's up even more that he said this. As you might expect. Yeah. So, you know, it's like, so who else had heard this before we heard it? Because some people are saying, you know, my Windows 8, like, single-sourced leak story was why their stock was up. And I'm like, no, something else is going on. And somebody knows something, but how do they know it and who knows it? This is very out of the ordinary.
Steve must be we know he's under pressure. The Skype deal was clearly something that, as we found out, it took Bill Gates to come in and swing the board behind. That is the biggest dangler out there right now, $8.5 billion for Skype. And let's not forget, he actually paid more than they wanted. They wanted $7 billion. So it's, you know, what can I say? Questionable judgment in the past. Here we are. Steve, it had to happen. What do we think? I mean, we always wind up at this point. Who will replace him? We don't know. Nobody visible inside the company, nobody visible outside the company. But ultimately, these people are replaceable. Who'd have thought Leo Apotheker would end up as CEO of HP?
You know, the rumor that went around, it wasn't even a rumor. It was more just like somebody, I think it was at Fortune, saying, you know what would make a lot of sense and be kind of cool? What if Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix, who sits on Microsoft's board and also sits on Facebook's board, was going to become the new Steve? I don't know if I'd want that job if I were Reed Hastings, but then that set off a whole wave of speculation. Is Microsoft going to buy Netflix and then Reed Hastings would be the next CEO? And I'm like, you know, of all the crazy rumors I've heard about who might be the next CEO of Microsoft, I'm like, that one actually doesn't scare me. It's kind of crazy, but I mean, I'm like, well, if they want to appeal to a younger generation, they're doing more and more consumer, they're doing more services. Netflix isn't as crazy as it may sound.
Not as crazy. Not the craziest of rumors out there really right now, but you know, where do these things start?
Well, yeah. Oh, the other, I want to say one other thing about what Ballmer said to the Rotary Club, because he said a lot of interesting things to the Rotary Club. Those guys got quite the speech that night.
I must renew my membership to the Rotary Club.
I guess we both should. He also said he told the people in attendance there that Microsoft is now going to bet big on the big bets at the company and abandon some of the, quote, idle, smaller things inside the company, which if you're working at Microsoft on an incubation project, that might make you a little nervous. Just saying.
What was the project? So they canceled the smart meter thing?
They canceled Home, HOHM, which is their home energy monitoring service, right the day after he said that, in fact.
But as I think we said earlier, this is not news. They've been, this comes under the category of cutting costs, and Google, I'm sorry, Microsoft, that was a bit of a slip. Microsoft has been cutting its costs for, 2 years now? And cutting projects as part of that as well. So that was all designed, you know, heads have been rolling, stuff been kind of moved around. So I don't think he's really saying, I mean, he's just kind of, you know, he's pointing a sign to what's been going on there at Microsoft for the last year or 2 years or so.
Yes.
So it's with great pleasure that I come towards the Steve Ballmer mood index. We have our options on the table are frustrated, intense, all business, victorious, and monkey boy. I'm pretty sure you're not going to say monkey boy this week.
I'm not going to say monkey boy.
So what are you going with?
I am going to say all business.
All business.
I think because
not frustrated or intense, because it's. I mean, now.
Oh yeah, maybe intense. Intense.
His ass is on the line finally, you know, and he knows it.
Yeah. Although you know what, based on what he said, I actually made as my headline about his Rotary Club appearance. Steve Ballmer says, and I'm telling you, I'm not going. Just like Jennifer Hudson said, I'm not going to sing it though because I'm horrible at singing. But, I think he feels like he's still the right guy for the job. I really do think he thinks that, and I think if he didn't think that, he might actually be willing to go.
There's a lot of truth in that. Yeah, if the moment he has self-doubt will be the moment he's out, and I think this is true of a lot of CEOs.
Yeah, because they own so much stock in the company. Do you want to see the company where all your money is tank? You don't, right?
Correct. I would maybe go with intense because it's quite an intense time right now.
Yes.
All business is good. Intense because of just the personal aspect of what's going on. I'm sure he's harder to be around than usual, or should we say more challenging to be around with than usual because of his intense focus on what's going on. But yeah, I'm going to go with intense.
You've convinced me to go with intense also.
Yeah. Okay, good. Glad to hear that.
Yes.
Well, there you go. Quiet summer, eh? They used to exist.
Not so quiet.
not quite at Microsoft anymore, no.
No.
Well, that about covers it for this edition of Microbyte. My name's Gavin Clark, software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog.
And this has been Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.